Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. The Middle Ground looks at today's political issues from left, right, and center. We're always civil and always looking for that middle ground where real conversation begins. You're here tonight with hosts Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. We thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy the next hour of The Middle Ground.
Welcome, everyone. This is Michael Charney. Thanks for spending an hour with us this evening on The Middle Ground, or as we like to call it tonight, the State of the Union pregame show. We're going to have a slightly abbreviated show this evening. We recognize that a lot of people are going to want to watch the State of the Union, and we want to give people, that starts at 9 o'clock, we want to give people a few minutes ahead of time to grab a snack out of the refrigerator or, you know, line up their shots if they're playing a State of the Union drinking game, as I've seen advertised across Facebook on many different sites today. But of course, it is a serious event, no matter how we may refer to it. And it is the chance, as always, for the president, as required by the Constitution, to stand up in front of a joint session of Congress and report on the State of the Union. And tonight, we are interested in hearing about what you think. We've asked a few questions. We'd like to kind of get a sense of what you expect tonight and what you hope tonight and to hear. They may not be the same things. I think for many of us, they won't be the same things. And also kind of get your impressions of what your estimation is of the State of the Union as it is today. Is it better? Is it worse? Is it on an uphill track? Is it on a downhill track? Is it stuck? We're hoping to hear from a lot of you tonight on that issue. Our number here is 646-929-2495. As always, feel free to call in and join the show. Just press 1 if you would like to talk with us a bit about your impressions of the State of the Union, what you expect to hear or what you don't expect to hear, what you hope to hear, what you don't hope to hear. I'm joined tonight, as always, with Eric Beiler. I'm going to give a quick welcome to him, and then I'm going to bring in special guest Annabelle Park, who's going to spend a few minutes with us giving her impressions. First of all, Eric, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
Good. I know that Annabelle only has just a few minutes to spend with us, so I'm going to eschew our usual casual banter, which often goes on for 10 or 15 minutes, and which no doubt bores just a few people out there, but amuses us. I'm going to go right ahead and bring in Annabelle. Annabelle, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us this evening. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for doing the show.
I'm doing well, thank you. And as always, we appreciate your spending a little time with us. So I know you've only got a few minutes, but you do have a rapt audience, I'm sure, interested in your opinions on the subject. always good to hear from you. So what do you expect and what do you hope to hear, and how might those two be different for you?
Yeah, I know that we're anticipating emphasis on the economy, with some references to immigration reform and gun control. I am hoping to hear some concrete ideas about the economy, especially about, I think, foreclosure crisis or millions of homes that are underwater. I guess that's the one thing that one of the things that really has disappointed me about Obama's administration is that I feel like he just has not done enough to deal with this, and it's causing it's contributing to kind of a general impoverishment of the middle class, because homes are the biggest investment for most Americans, and when you have, you know, millions of homes underwater, you know, it's just going to lead to instability, financial instability, and economic recession. So I guess I would love to hear something really concrete about that, as well as about creating jobs. So, yeah, I guess that's what I'm hoping for, is really specific things you know, told in a compelling narrative that won't alienate Republicans, although it's always so difficult, but that would really rally people to say, okay, this is a time of rebuilding, and at, you know, we have to face these challenges that we've had a difficult time facing. So that's really what I would love to see happen. I mean, I think in the past, I would have said, you know, I would really love for him to talk about things like Wall Street reform, accountability. But at this point, I've more or less have given up on him talking about that, which is very disappointing. But anyway, so I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. I mean, I guess I feel optimistic about the country right now. So I'm not one of the pessimists. I'm one of the optimists.
So why? I'm curious.
Why am I optimistic?
Mm-hmm.
I think people are just so tired of political theater and shenanigans that I think right now people are in that frame of mind to be very concrete and practical. That's what it seems to me like we're just sick of the theater. We're sick of the circus. And I think after the election, you know, it's almost like waking up from a hangover. We're sobering up to reality that we still have these enormous problems beyond all the campaign rhetoric. We have to actually solve them. And I hope that,
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that optimism in spite of what you expect to hear tonight or in the past or because of it? So, yeah, I mean, the reason I ask is because you just talked a bit about the tremendous weight that the housing industry is weighing on predominantly the middle class and in many cases the lower middle class who were sold a lot of these subprime mortgages. So if you feel pessimistic about that particular part of the country, and yet you feel it's a key part, or perhaps the most important part of the near term, how do you then translate that into feeling generally optimistic?
Well, I think optimistic in the sense that it can't get worse than what we've been dealing with in the last, you know, two and a half years or so. So I feel like we're kind of like, you know, drug addicts or alcoholics. We've kind of hit rock bottom, and we can only kind of get better from here. So politically, we've been kind of at rock bottom. So I'm optimistic in the sense that it's got to get better. But you know, I do really, you know, want to point out to the audience that we're dealing with a staggering problem. We're dealing with, you know, 14 million homes that are underwater, and it's not the lower part of our income bracket. It's almost 30% of all homeowners.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, so that's a lot of people, and it's you're also talking about 1/5 of all children living in poverty as well. I mean, these are staggering figures that we have to grapple with. So at some point, we're going to have to sober up and deal with it instead of just wallowing in this kind of, I don't know, self-pity that some of us have been in. I know that I have felt that at times. I feel like I'm just feeling sorry for myself and our country. But now it really is time to do a 12 steps program and go from point A to point B and get ourselves out of this mess.
Well, you know, the first step is obviously admitting you have a problem, and I'm not sure that those in Congress you're the one who brought up the 12-step analogy. I'm not sure that there are all that many people in Congress on either side, or actually in politics at all, or in the judiciary, who are quite yet ready to take that step. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I do share, it sounds like you have, you know, it sounds like a cautious optimism. I don't want to put words in your mouth. That's what I would call it for myself. I don't think we've, I hope we've hit the bottom that we will hit. I don't share with you the sentiment that things can't get a whole lot worse. We still have a tremendous debt problem, not a deficit problem. Mm-hmm. There's a real distinction between the two. I think we have a real debt problem in this country. The housing market is very slow to come back. The employment market is very, very slow to come back. We have this educational, the educational loans that are sort of hanging like a scythe over our necks, and we have kicked the fiscal cliff. You know, we basically built, we've built a bridge halfway across from one side of the fiscal cliff to whatever's on the other side. We haven't finished the bridge at all, and then we've told people to go ahead and step out on it, just don't look down. So I'm not entirely sure that we're out of those woods yet either.
I just want to say, though, I don't mean that we're financially at a low point. I mean politically at a low point, meaning just the level of partisanship and polarization and real immaturity, self-destructive behavior. I mean the political circus. I feel like that's been at a low point, not necessarily that we couldn't get worse financially.
Well, okay, and in that case, I definitely agree with you. And of course, we all know there's a list of people, anyone from, you know, a Sean Hannity to a Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and we know exactly what they're going to say later on tonight and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And as long as those people and their responses are completely predictable, I still think we're at something of a nadir in terms of our political conversation.
I don't think we're going to have people calling Obama a socialist and a terrorist and a communist and all the kind of...
Oh, Annabelle, of course we will.
You obviously
don't listen to all the right radio stations.
Well, I don't mean...
the far right radio stations, I mean.
Right, but I don't mean like... I don't think you're going to get that at the same level that we had in the past. I don't mean
Well,
that.
I don't think you'll get anyone shouting out that he's a liar. that's for sure.
Right.
I think there's a little bit more dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. At least that veneer has been put back. So I don't want to keep you. I know you have a tight schedule. If you were writing his speech and you were going to lay down, you know, here are the five bullet points that the American people need to hear from you. What would they be in your mind?
I can't think in terms of five bullet points right now. I mean, I will say that I would love for him to channel a bit of Roosevelt and really position what must be done in terms of the infrastructure investment that we have to make and taking care of people in terms of creating solid safety nets. I would channel some Roosevelt instead of sounding a bit too, moderate. You know, I would love for him to really champion the people out there who are really at wit's end and struggling and suffering and not sugarcoat that, you know, because I think there's a tendency that he has to kind of talk about lifting the middle class and blah, 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 when you're talking about people who are hanging by a thread and one paycheck away from poverty. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety and suffering going on. I don't want him to sugarcoat that. I want him to really say it like it is and say that this is how step by step we're gonna get transition out of this into real prosperity. So I mean, in the past I've had problems with his State of the Union speeches, feeling like things were getting sugar coated.
Oh no question about that. I actually took the time, as I mentioned at the top of the show. I never watch these speeches. I read them. I'll watch them after I read them, so I'll wait and read it tomorrow. But I went back today and reread last year's State of the Union. And then just for sort of laughs and giggles, as my wife would say, I went back and pulled up the 2011 State of the Union. And with the exception of the framing, last year he framed it around the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and the military and the way it comes together and using them as an example of teamwork. The year before that, he had Gabby Giffords on. The speeches were essentially the same. I mean, he basically hit the education point, he hit the energy point, he hit the grand vision point, but then really didn't lay out a grand vision, something about high speed rail. And it occurred to me that that it is You know, if he does that again, I'll be really disappointed. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want him to say what you want him to say. I certainly agree with you, whether it's Roosevelt or someone else, that he needs to exhibit a much higher level sense of leadership and powerfulness, and a little less flippancy and a little less, I don't know, more visionary, more leader-like than I think he's shown in the last couple of speeches.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I'm not sure if I'm saying the same thing, but I guess I want him to keep it real. I want him to, you know, show that he recognizes the level of anxiety and suffering out there.
I agree. I think that's
like he's done that.
It's an important quality for a leader to do that. No question about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm hoping for, but often I'm disappointed.
Well, hopefully you'll be blogging about it in the next day or two, so we'll be able to get your thoughts and share them with people as well through the Coffee Party website. My guess is that either through video or pen, we'll hear from you on the subject not long after it's over, which is a good thing. And we'll let you go. Like I said, we've got a bit of a shortened show. I want to thank you very much for the time. And
thanks, Michael. I appreciate how you conduct these shows. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you, Annabelle. Take care. Eric,
how
are you? We're going to bring you back in because I think the questions I asked Annabelle, I think were questions that you had put out to the Coffee Party community, along with, I guess, with a few other questions as well. So, you know, and we've already got a couple callers in the queue, so I'm going to sort of turn it over to you and let you set up the rest of the show for us.
Okay. Well, we did put out a kind of a multiple choice. Since it's the State of the Union address, the question is, what best describes our union? A, a state of paralysis. B, a state of rebuilding. C, state of denial. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/coffeeparty, there is an array of different answers. One of the ones I liked was from Shelley Garneau. She said, I think we are in a state of rebuilding, but there is some paralysis because people are reacting in fear rather than action. We can only move forward when we take steps forward. So with that, I'll just give the number out one more time, 646-929-2495, and we will go to the first person to call in, which was a 954 area code. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, and whether you want to answer our multiple choice or just expound on the state of the union today.
Neil.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Neil from Fort Lauderdale. How you doing?
Hey, Neil.
I just think that we're under paralysis. The Republicans, because of the gerrymandering in the House, we're not going anywhere. They basically are going to fight everything that he says. Obama could say the sun is hot, and they'll say no. It's basically, you know, what's going on with the corporations. I wish Obama would really expound on the fact that 25% of corporations don't pay any taxes, or they pay 2%, and they're yelling for Social Security and Medicare to be modified, but they're not paying any taxes whatsoever, but they sure love their corporate welfare. I just think that, you know, we cannot go after the heart of America to sacrifice for the sins of the plutocrats.
Well, you always seem to be upset with what the Republican Party is doing. Do you see any reason to hope that what you're describing is maybe what the Tea Party and the extreme right is doing, but there are statesmen, there are stateswomen in Congress who are beginning to take a more moderate stance in the Republican Party?
Well, the thing is that the problem is the Tea Party is running the show. I mean, Rand guy is going to be speaking after Mark Rubio, who I also have pretty much no respect for.
Rand Paul.
I'm not going to be watching him. I think he's a lunatic. But I just think the problem is that, you know, the Republicans have created this monster. Now they can't get these guys out. They're being run. They're having almost like this internal civil war. There are moderates in the Republican Party, but the rational moderates in the Republican Party may have a voice, but they don't have the power. It's the extremist element of the Republican Party that is really running the show.
Yeah, well, you know, like if it were a TV show, right? And I've always, I don't know why, but I've always been haunted by an episode of Lost in Space when I was a little kid, and the dad was fighting against a robot version of the dad that looked just like him, and they were on this bridge. I haven't seen it since, so it's been more than 30 years.
I remember it.
They were fighting on this bridge, and then one of them fell off, and I was young, and I kind of wasn't sure which one fell off, and the show ended, and I thought that the evil robot dad was going back into the spaceship with the family, and they were flying off together, and I was like, oh my God, don't you realize it's the evil robot? But I bring that up to you because it was indeed scary when the Tea Party and the Republican Party were walking in stride. And their goal was to defeat President Obama in 2012. And they sounded like they were one and the same. That was scary. But now that the establishment Republican Party is standing up to the Tea Party, and it's not clear who has the upper hand. I don't think the Tea Party necessarily runs the show. But just the fact that I can tell which is which now, that gives me hope.
Well, I always can tell which is which. Just basically, I mean, maybe not completely in control, but they have more power than they deserve. I mean, we have this Cruz in Texas. I mean, they all voted against the Violence Against Women Act in unison, all the Republicans. They are all against any type of stopping corporate welfare. They're all in line with that. They're against corporations removing corporate welfare or corporations paying taxes. They're all in line with that.
Well, let me bring Michael in. First of all, Michael, do you have any idea why 22 senators voted against the Violence Against Women Act? Is there an argument for that?
I actually don't know. I mean, I haven't read any, other than seeing the meme that's floating around on Facebook and knowing what the results are. I'm not intensely familiar with the act, nor am I familiar with their objections. I find it very, very strange. You know, on the surface of it, why anybody would vote against something called the Violence and Women Act. On the other hand, there are lots of things that are named strangely, so I can't say that I know what's in there.
Okay. What about Neil had to say?
I don't know. On the surface, it's crazy to me why anybody would have voted against it, based on what I know. But I'm sure that some of them have reasons, and they could very well be religious ones. They could very well be I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I have a tough time even imagining what a reason would be.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be either. I'm going to try to find out, though. I didn't have a chance to look it up before the show. But what about the stuff that Neil was saying as well, that he doesn't have hope, or as much as he could have, because he isn't confident that the mainstream Republican Party can overcome the insurgent Tea Party wing of the Republican Party.
Well, Neil and I share a common concern over the Tea Party and its influence. And I always sort of qualify that by saying the Tea Party, the hijacked version of the Tea Party, not the Tea Party as it originally was intended to be. But on the other hand, I do disagree with Neil on a couple of points. I don't think these people have more power than they deserve. They have exactly as much power as they deserve. They were elected.
Mm-hmm.
And so they deserve that power. Whether or not we like it or not is a different issue from whether they were fairly elected. There's been a lot of talk about the gerrymandering and how that's done a lot of this. And the truth is the gerrymandering wasn't in place at that time. In many cases, it continues to go on. And by the way, it's nothing new. The parties in power have always used the census to their advantage for redistricting purposes. And they've gotten cleverer and cleverer about how to do it in a way that's legal and still meets their own personal agendas. So, those are systemic things, and that's not about the Tea Party, in my opinion. That's about politics and power, independent of which party is there at all. I also, we haven't talked about this before. I'm curious to get your take on this. And if you want to bring Neil back in a little later, get his take on it as well. It starts to get to me a little bit as a Republican that a lot of the focus is on the dysfunction in the Republican Party and the internal warfare. And those things are true. I'm not denying that they're true. But because they are a present problem, that is, not present in time, but because they are something we can see, they are a presence, it's very easy to talk about them, as opposed to, I think there's a highly, almost an equivalent dysfunction in the Democratic Party, notable by its absence. There is no strong left wing in the Republican Party, in the Democratic Party left, to pull the party back away from where the dysfunctional Republican Party has been pulling it. And to say that the Republicans, because they have Congress, because they're holding the country hostage, because this, because that, that's the dysfunctional side, it just means that they're better organized and stronger in getting what they want. And the Democrats are equally dysfunctional through the absence of any counterforce. It's the old "it takes two to tango." The Republicans are not so much more brilliant or so much more stronger that they've been able to pull a perfectly well organized, perfectly functional, plain vanilla, everybody exactly the way they want it, Democratic Party. Anyway, the Republicans pull them all over the place. They pull them around by a ring in their nose half the time. So you have to look also at what's not working in the Democratic Party, and just because what's not working is an absence of something doesn't mean it isn't equally dysfunctional and not equally responsible for some of the problems that we have.
Well, tell me if I'm responding with a misunderstanding, but I know that a lot of people were frustrated during the first term of the Obama administration, especially before he went into campaign mode, which is essentially when he gave up on the Republicans going along with the infrastructure rebuilding and the Jobs Act type of stuff, and he just started blaming them for not supporting it. They were frustrated that he was always beginning negotiations in the place where he thought was the compromise and then getting pulled further toward the right. And because I guess what you're saying is that there are Democrats on the left who really were to the left of Obama but didn't do a good job of kind of making him stiffen his spine and not cave in. There was a lot of frustration that Obama was caving in. I spent that whole time being dismayed, but not. I wasn't upset with Obama because I probably would have done the same thing. I would have really tried to extend a hand to the Republicans. I would have tried to compromise and govern from the center. So I might have been caught in a lot of the same traps that he was caught in. But you know, going back to what Annabelle and you also mentioned, infrastructure, that would, you know, as Fareed Zakaria said today, it would help our economy get to escape velocity if we could agree that we do want to rebuild that infrastructure, that we do want to create jobs, and we do want our economy to grow. How we fund it is another question, but there, you know, the infrastructure bank, there are creative ways to do it. And then when we look over at the Republican, you know, House of Representatives, the caucus there, we see such obstruction. That's, you know, to me, the reason why I focus on the internal war within the Republican Party, because it gives me hope. Because I've seen several times in the last few months since the election, the moderate Republicans joining with the Democrats to pass a reasonable compromise, while the extremist Republicans, you know, pulled their hair out. But at least we made progress. And I just hope there's going to be more of those.
And I agree completely. I think, no, you haven't misrepresented my point at all. I certainly am not castigating Obama, or nor would I castigate anyone for attempting to govern from the center. This isn't about Obama. This is about the party politics and the ease with which we blame the Republican warfare, the internal Republican warfare, on the problem. And I would say, you know, yes, there are very few Olympia Snows, and she's left, but there are also very few Bernie Sanders or Barney Franks, and Barney Frank left. And so the same people, it's unfortunate that I have to equate the moderate Republicans with the far, far left Democrats. But basically, the Democratic Party has not produced or not organized around any kind of a counterbalance to the Tea Party after quite a few years of facing this. And I think that's part of my point, that the dysfunction is shared, And in the Republican Party, it's very obvious where the dysfunction is. It's much more subtle on the Democratic side, but I believe it exists there as well.
Yeah, well, definitely Annabelle and I have watched over the last 6 years as different communities at different and on different scales tried to figure out how to respond to hyper-divisive and really intimidating political tactics that like the Tea Party used. But let's take a few more calls, and
yes,
maybe we can...
Let's get back to the State of the Union. That's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So 503 first, and then we're going to go to 404. 503 area code, let us know your name, where you're calling from, and what do you think is the state of the union today?
Hi, Eric Michael. It's Dan Aronson. How are you?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan. How are you? Good to hear from you.
I'm sorry? So I actually had kind of done what you had asked Annabelle to do, which is put together my top five of what I want to hear, and I know you're short on time, so I could go through them pretty quickly. If you'd like to hear them.
Sure.
Please. Go ahead.
Okay. So I kind of do it David Letterman style. We'll go from number five up to number one.
That'll be fine.
I'd like to hear his observation of what happened at the state levels with all the votes on the social issues, the gay marriage issues, the legalization of marijuana issues. And I'm interested to hear if he thinks that what happened actually equates into a mandate for action at the national level. You know, do we want to bring that up again as a national level, or do we want to leave it at the state level? I'm curious as to how he feels about that.
Interesting. Okay.
I want to hear a lot of anti-NDAA messaging. I want to hear specifics on the closing of Gitmo, specifically only because that one, because he promised that at the very beginning of his first term or while he was campaigning for his first term. And I'd like to hear something that says we're going to reduce drone attacks or stop them. Certainly, and say put up a barrier and say no way we're flying drones over the U.S. I'd like to hear that. I'd like to hear a strategy on Iran. Are we going to use the stick or the carrot to keep Iran from becoming a nuclear power? Because that is a very touchy subject, and how we play that out is going to it's going to have huge consequences.
Right,
depending
and
on how we go about that.
Given today's news, it's not just Iran now either.
Right, exactly.
North Korea.
Yeah. So I want to hear specifics on ending the wars and getting our troops home. I know we hear that all the time, but I'd actually like to, I don't know, somehow believe him this time. But most importantly, and if I don't hear this, then forget it. The whole thing's off anyway. It doesn't matter what I hear. I want to hear concrete plans for how we're going to get the middle class back to work. If we don't get the middle class back to work, I don't think any of the other stuff matters, frankly.
Well, so let me ask. I agree with you. I think it's an interesting list. Some of it, reflects perhaps your concerns more than mine. It sounds like a list, except maybe the top one, that we're probably not going to hear anything much about. I mean, I would be surprised if he brings up things like, votes on marijuana, things like that. But let me ask you a different question slightly. Do you really expect to hear specifics? Because historically, that's not what the State of the Union is really about.
Yes and no. We've had State of the Unions, Michael, I think where we've had, here's my 25-point plan for doing this. And we've had those kinds of things that are unfortunate.
Well, all right, let me rephrase.
Certainly the last two
State of the Unions, the last two speeches that he gave,
absolutely.
Would
no,
suggest
and that's
we're not
going
to hear that level of detail.
Exactly, and we haven't, and I think this is the leads me to my overall point or the overall tone of what I want to hear. I want to hear a leader. I don't want to hear a politician. Right? He's done politicking. He has nothing left to lose. He's not going to be up for re-election next term. I want to hear this is what I'm going to be doing over my next 4 years, and this is what I want to see done here in this country, and this is what I'm going to push for, and. Let's take off the gloves. It's what Annabelle said. Let's not sugarcoat it. Let's take off the gloves. Because in the end, the State of the Union, it's just throwing down the gauntlet, right? It's like, hey, Congress, here's what I want to get done, right? And so, and that's what I want to hear. And I don't, like Annabelle, I don't want him to push it around. I want him to come out swinging. And I want, that's what I want to hear, a leader, not a politician.
I would agree with you on that completely. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for as well.
Yep. Those are my thoughts, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, Dan. We're going to go to 404 area code next. 404, let us know where you're calling from, your name, and what you think the State of the Union address should contain.
Robert Rodrigo in Atlanta, guys. Good evening. Nice to be talking to you as usual. I tend to go to the side of the strong message, strong leadership aspect as well. What I'm looking for as far as the State of the Union, I believe, would suit me perfectly is utter, unfettered honesty, whether it is positive or negative. Certainly positives that we could have is, for example, the president is supposed to announce today that he's going to bring 34,000 troops home this year from Afghanistan. I certainly want to hear that. From a positive standpoint, I would like to. I echo the words about some positive developments in the social area when it involves equality throughout the spectrum. I certainly would like to hear that with a forceful tone, emphasizing that is the direction our country should go. I am a little bit more cynical, I believe, than what I've heard from the two of you and Annabelle earlier when it comes to have we reached bottom. I mean, I don't want to go off point or anything, but I don't know if we have. Ted Nugent is invited to go to the State of the Union. To me, that's ludicrous. And it is doing things that we just don't need in our society. My real problem with what's going on, besides the money thing that I harp on so much, is I'm hard-pressed to find 10 people. I say this to a lot of people. I said, especially in a partisan conversation, I'm hard-pressed to find 10 people that I can say truly exist in our Congress that I would say are absolutely working for us. And when Michael was giving the example of how the Democratic Party has been lacking, and Eric, when you're talking about the Tea Party, I go back let's just say, to the Iraq War and how so many people in the Democratic Party voted for it because they saw their election demise if they didn't, really is the only reason, for example. And I don't know if we're going to get anywhere because everybody's not working for us. They're working for their reelection. They're working for the money and the lobbyists. So I would like our leader to point all these things out, and I don't expect it, but, I would like to see a line drawn in the sand on a number of things that I despise that are going on in our society that are obvious. I would like to have a lot more focus on poverty. I do agree with Annabelle on that. I think that the situation on the poor is that much more dire than it is in the middle class, especially considering the disparity from the top down in the amount of money that's being earned and how it keeps getting further and further apart, because as it leaves the middle class, which is becoming a lower class, the poor is just getting decimated. I absolutely agree with that. I believe it's almost it's so dire that's done with this great country that we have and in the size of our economy that we are not paying attention to that, and people are in the dire straits that they are. And I am hoping that, I almost want him to pick enemies with Congress at this point, because what else does he have to lose? He doesn't have to worry about the election. And maybe he will focus on doing the job for our people, regardless of the results. I would love to see somebody fighting for some of the things. Some of the things that Dan mentioned, I also side with, but like you, Michael, I don't believe he's going to be talking about them, unfortunately. And that's a real problem. Where I'm at with that.
Yeah, I was thinking, a lot of people have mentioned things that are not going to be talked about. And when Annabelle mentioned hers, the people who are really, really suffering, children in poverty, families hanging by a string, why doesn't President Obama talk about that? And why don't Republicans talk about that? And I was thinking, so much of politics is presented to us as a binary choice, Republican or Democrat. And then the issues are presented to us only in the context of that, and only if they perceive that it's going to affect our vote in the favor of whoever's talking. So why doesn't President Obama talk about it? Obviously, he wants everyone to feel optimistic about where the country's going. Before his reelection, it was because he needed to get reelected. And now I think it's because he probably has more leverage in his negotiations with Congress if he has a high approval rating and people feel good about the direction the country is going. So the poor are going to be not mentioned for that reason by the president. And then, of course, the Republicans aren't mentioning them, because if they did, then people might ask them, well, what are we going to do for them? And then I'm not sure what the answer would be for them. What do you think about that analysis?
I think you're absolutely right in that regard. I mean, certainly the kind of things that we'd like to hear, I would agree with you on, especially particularly with the poor aspect of it. I mean, I wasn't even so much thinking about Republicans and the president, where that's why I mentioned the 10, you know, name 10 people who you really think work for us. Now, earlier, Michael mentioned Olympia Snow and Bernie Sanders. Those are good. Those are two good choices, and of course, Olympia's gone. You know, as you mentioned, you know, that's what's lacking here is people who really, truly are working for us, and then we might hear more about the poor. But it's a lost cause. There's nobody lobbying it for it, of course. And you're right. I mean, the State of the Union should be something a little bit more honest, even though you want to give people hope. To me, we're in such an information age, even though we have so much disinformation, but we are in such an information age that a little bit more honesty, I think, is the right path. I mean, here in the Coffee Party, as we all know, we emphasize the honesty and the facts besides the civility. And that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, I have hope and keep fighting, because I think there are a large amount of people who are just seeing it that way, where let's deal with the facts, et cetera. And I really want our government to be more honest and more factual with me, regardless of how it appears from the hope standpoint, you know, and the marketing that we all talk about that is just so ridiculous but necessary to get messages across. You know, so it's a quandary mm-hmm. there. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
All right, well, thank you, Robert. Hey, Michael, I thought, you know, we have Neil still on the line, and you wanted to come back to him. I just want to introduce one more topic, because it's always interesting where we don't agree. Actually, I guess there were two things that we didn't agree on in recent months.
I thought we were always in perfect agreement.
Well, more than
that would be
a boring
show,
that,
wouldn't it?
You know, we're in agreement more than maybe would make for good radio, but it's been a great experience to find how much common ground there can be between you and I. But
ever since you dubbed me the coolest person in the Coffee Party, I decided to agree with you more.
It's only been a week. No, it's been 2 weeks. But anyway, the two things where we didn't agree recently. I'm going to throw out three topics. One was, okay, you endorsed Mitt Romney before the election because you thought that if Romney were to win, that the Republicans in Congress would be more likely to cooperate. So I wanted to see if you still felt that way. Obviously, I kind of predicted that what has actually happened, that Obama would win, and that would be what chastens the extremism in the Republican Party. The second thing is about this Karl Rove thing, which you didn't get a chance to sound off on last week, because you weren't able to join the show, but you did write a blog about it, that basically your principles wouldn't allow you to support Karl Rove's super PAC, basically blitzkrieging the Tea Party's candidates to make sure more centrist and more viable candidates emerge from primaries, because it's undemocratic. And I was sort of being a pragmatist and saying that it might be actually better for our country, though, if we could get more mainstream candidates out of the Republican primaries. And then the third one is on the constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, where actually I'm much closer to you than a lot of people that were on our Facebook board, although I wouldn't poo-poo anybody's solution, and I would support any and all solutions that try to address the issue of money in politics. So I just want to get, if you want to take a stab at any or all of those.
I'll dismiss the first one out of hand, because I don't see much value in arguing counterfactuals. So it's impossible to know what would have happened if I were sitting here today. Would I vote the way I voted? Yes, for the same reasons. The answer is yes, I would. But there's no point in me pretending that I have a way with any facts to defend my reasoning that things would have been better or different if Mitt Romney were president. There's
okay.
no way
Skip
to say
two.
Right.
Skip to
so,
two.
I just want to point, I'm not punting on that. It's the issue of counterfactuals. By definition, don't have facts, and so it's just an exercise, and you know, it's just an exercise.
Okay.
I have another phrase coming to mind from John Keats, but it's rather rude, so I'm going to let it go.
Okay.
The second point, Karl Rove. So, I have been and I'm not patting myself on the back for this. I don't have any more or fewer principles than anybody else. And everybody has a few that they just hold very, very dear. And it's almost like an electric front fence sort of principle. I don't know how I would deal with not upholding it for myself. And one of those is not allowing I'll use an intensely brutal word, not allowing a Machiavellian view of the ends justify the means. If the means are so wrong, in my opinion, then the means are simply so wrong, in my opinion. And so I would actually argue, and again, we're arguing hypotheticals, but you just made the point that, you know, the country might be better off if Karl Rove actually succeeds and manages to, you know, keep, you know, oust some Tea Partiers in primaries and keep some other Tea Partiers from running. I think that's a Pyrrhic victory. I think in the long run, the country will be worse off the more times we have examples where flooding money into politics makes a difference. In the long run, we're going to be worse off every time money in politics succeeds, even if it succeeds for something that you personally think is a good idea. I think that's a short-sighted victory.
Well said.
I don't want money in politics to win ever, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't support him, even though the goal that he has in mind is a good one. And I have the same... I have a similar electric fence principle with respect to move to amend, I wrote over and over and over again, although people just only read sometimes what they want to read, that I support the goal of move to amend. I support the idea of getting money out of politics. I support the grassroots efforts. I think it's a wonderful organization in what they're doing. And it, particularly in terms of educating people on this issue, in terms of keeping it on the front pages, it's great. They're doing the job we want to be doing. We're doing it alongside with them at the coffee party. What I don't agree with is outside special interest groups, and they are a special interest group. They have a special interest. It just happens to be one we agree with. Drafting legislation, handing it to Congress people, and saying, submit this as legislation. If it's okay for one group to do it, it's okay for any group to do it. And it can't be just because you agree or disagree with what the legislation they happen to be drafting.
Okay.
To me, it's just unacceptable. So
thank you.
So that's
good. Sorry.
Where I am on that.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for those answers. We could go in deeper into them, but we got a 610 area code that we're gonna 610 area code. We want to hear from Anil. We're gonna give you a chance to get a last word in as well. 610 area code. You're on the middle ground with Michael Charney and Eric Beiler. Let us know your name, where you're calling from, and what you think the state of the union is today.
Am I on?
Mm-hmm.
You are on.
Okay,
is this Bob,
because,
Mr. Trotner?
Yes, Bob. I wasn't in the queue. I was just sort of listening. And I think my remark is going to be very dull, because what I want to hear most of all, it's going to sound corny, is I want to hear that he's going to put his weight behind campaign finance reform, but he can't do that because he has the Organizing for Action, which raised big money from corporations to support a center-right agenda. You know, the policies go into effect, and they're not bad policies, they're not great policy, but there's not going to be campaign finance reform, which is what we really need, and that's, I guess, and the way I feel about Organizing for Action is, as a Democrat, I love it, but as a Coffee Party member, I think I hate it. Well, that's all I have to say.
Bob, you and I share that sensibility. Sometimes there's a principle that you believe in, and even though they're doing something you like, it's hard to swallow.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I agree with you. And I agree with you on campaign finance reform. I think we will hear, if we hear anything, it will be lip service. I went back specifically to last year's speech to look for that issue, And he actually had, he talked, and I'm going to quote him, he talked about the, quote, corrosive influence of money in politics, unquote, last year. And he said he wanted to, quote, take some steps to fix that, and went on to recommend that we needed a bill that banned insider trading. He said he'd sign it tomorrow. He did a lot of that sort of, I'll sign this tomorrow if you just get it on my desk.
Yeah, I remember.
Last year. He said he wanted to limit elected officials from owning stocks in industry. And by this point, I'm losing interest because this is sort of like telling the cancer patient that their fingernails have grown too long and we're going to clip your fingernails, right?
Right.
And if that's what he did last year with one of these, you know, bring this to my desk and I'll sign this bill tomorrow and that'll lick the money in politics problem as long as you can't, you know, buy stock in companies we're discussing, that's just such a facile argument that I expect to hear pretty much nothing. And to your point, he's actually exercising. He's using the money he's got and raising more money under the aegis of his previous campaign organs to raise money for his agendas. And to your point, you probably like more of his agenda than I do, although I don't dislike all of it. But we do bump into that, you know. He's gonna take advantage of the money in politics loopholes just like everybody else, and he just happens to be doing something that a lot of Coffee Party membership would agree with. To me, that and to you, it I can tell it doesn't feel right.
Nope.
Eric, your thought on that. You know, you asked me my opinion, and I obviously have a very strong one on this electric fence idea. Thanks, Bob, by the way, for the call. Very much.
Thank you.
What? Where do you sit with this? You know, principle versus outcome issue. I mean, I think it's an important one for all of us to be thinking about. I know it's a little off topic, but you brought it up.
Well, you know, as far as the Karl Rove thing, I would have argued the other side if it wasn't all flowing toward the Coffee Party principle being the most important thing. A lot of people were with you on that, Michael. And, you know, during the radio show, I was saying, well, you know, I know we're against big money in politics, but do you think it was small money that created the Tea Party? I mean, they're both basically animals of big money. It's just one is extreme and is destructive. And sort of nullification confederate, you know, and the other is a little bit more of the business wing of the Republican Party. They're representing the interests of big industries and corporations, which deserve to be represented, but we just don't want them to choke us to death. And I'm just a little bit more comfortable with them because they don't always, and actually usually don't organize around hatred. So I don't know. I want there to be less human suffering. And, I mean, that's why I'm involved in politics. And so my first calculation is what's going to help our country? You know, what's going to ease the suffering of American families? I could make arguments in both directions. But I will say Karl Rove made a mistake by showing his hand here. I think he should have tried to influence things a lot less publicly in terms of manipulating the Republican primaries. And, you know, when it was Santorum versus Romney and it was Gingrich versus Romney, the voters clearly wanted either Gingrich or Santorum. They didn't want Romney. And then they would use this firebomb, you know, thing state by state when Gingrich and Santorum couldn't respond. I was with you at that time. I just thought it was undemocratic. But, you know, I'm sort of torn, as you can tell, because I think our country has really suffered the last 4 years with this sort of nihilistic, this approach that the Republican Party has taken with the influence of the Tea Party, that it'd be better to see America fail than succeed under Obama. I just think I think it's a horrible way to govern.
I agree. I'm trying to think of the classical reference. I can't think of it right now. It's kind of a devil if you do, devil if you don't. We've got just a couple minutes left. Let's bring Neil back in. I'm curious about his Neil. I'm curious about your response to my comments about the dysfunction in the Democratic Party through the absence of a strong counterforce.
Yeah, there's always been this. There has never been the equivalent of a Democratic Tea Party. They've always just basically, it's always the same rhetoric. It's really, you know, and a lot of things that they haven't done, you know, especially when it comes to poverty in the middle class. And they really, what really bothers me about the Democratic Party is they haven't really emphasized that all the job bills were filibustered over the last 2 years. And basically, when you get in the way of economic recovery of your own country, I don't care who you are, if you're either you're doing it or you're not spotlighting it, it's economic treason.
Treason's a strong word. Sabotage,
yeah.
I'll go with, but treason I think is a
I'll use the word sabotage, but that's the way I feel. Because
I understand.
When you basically are standing in the way in a recovery of your own people, I have to question the morality and the integrity of you as a politician. I don't care who you are, Democrat or Republican. I'm a strong progressive, but I care about people. The politicians, you know, it's all a game. It's all a chess game. It's this never-ending chess game with very little substance. And
excuse me for interrupting. We're getting ready to wrap here so that people can go watch the speech. It sounds like you would agree with me a little bit that if there had been a loud countervailing force, somebody who was yelling, look at those filibusters, look at those guys, that maybe we could have had a way to break through some of this. And part of it is there was nobody around to really embarrass the Tea Party in the way that you just described.
No,
and had the Democratic Party had that wing that was a sort of a noise-making wing that in fact, maybe we could have gotten through some of this even faster.
Yes, sir. I didn't mean to offend you. I was just
No. You didn't offend me at all. I've sort of gotten used to my role as the Alan Combs of the Coffee Party Radio Network. So
just in the parting spot. I care about people. I care about. I want people to have good jobs. I don't care who you are, Republican or Democrat. And I want everybody in this country to move forward. That's all I care about. It's not really. That's passion. That's all.
And on that note, well said, Neil. Thank you very much. On that note, we're gonna go ahead and wind down. I'm gonna. Go ahead, Eric, why don't you take the last word on what you're hoping to hear tonight, and then I'll take us out.
Well, honestly, coming so close after the inauguration address, I'm really not, I don't know, I've just been not that psyched about listening to President Obama tonight, but I'm going to listen. I hope he surprises us. I would really like him to basically synthesize what Annabelle and all of our callers have said. And that is to start with where there is suffering and there people are hanging by a string and struggling. Be honest about that, you know, be forthright about that. Make a real convincing case based on that for the programs that he's been pushing for, you know, since he came in, the jobs bills, the infrastructure, the investment in education and research and development and clean energy that would actually create the jobs that would give us that escape velocity that Fareed Zakaria was talking about.
Yep. I agree with you, and I want to echo where we started with Annabelle, and a couple of callers have also mentioned this need to see a different level of leadership. I'm hoping to see some of that. With that, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. We'll give you a chance to get to your refrigerator, grab a snack, and I know some of you may not be watching the speech tonight, like I will. Don't feel guilty about it. If you're looking for an alternative, I will just let everybody know that Swagger, the old English sheepdog, and Jewel, the American foxhound, will be two of the seven finalists for Best in Show at the Westminster Kennel Club tonight. Feel free to watch that if that is if you so desire, but please at least take the time to either watch some video or read the speech tomorrow. I recommend reading the speech. With that, we will we'll go on out, and we'll see you all next week on the Middle Ground.
Our time for tonight. Thanks for joining us, and please share your comments and suggestions with us at conservatives.coffeepartyusa.com, where you can follow the Middle Ground and participate in the 99% media. Our theme was written and performed by The Consultants and produced by Van Gabriel. Please join us again next week on the Middle Ground. Until then, be wise, be strong, and be heard.